It's always been Sergey's fantasy that we would have Google integrated with your brain.
Larry Page's keynote speech on Friday was yet another message from a tech company at the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Google's Larry Page thinks every device ought to be able to connect to every other device. On PodTech News, his speech, which outlines the company's latest steps toward that end. Google is a company that seeks to make things simple but powerful. The firm continues to march to the beat of its own drummer. Some industry experts have said the Google mystique will eventually wear off, but users still seem hungry for the company's message. Be upfront and don't try to oversell. Google co-founder Larry Page rode onto the stage of the Hilton Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, to deliver the Friday afternoon keynote address to an audience of consumer electronics industry folks and journalists. Page registered disappointment over the lack of standards in the tech and electronics industries, which prevents devices from sharing data with each other. He unveiled new initiatives like a video content deal with CBS. Page brought out Robin Williams to help explain the concepts. We had to cut out comments by the comedian that ran the gamut from bilingual Google services to the apparent coincidence that CES and one of the porn industry's biggest conferences are happening at the same time, just blocks from each other. Here's the speech.
It's really great to be here, and it's a great honor. I think before I get started, I should explain what you guys were just watching. A lot of hard work went on at Google to produce all that. So initially, you were seeing the queries over about a five-minute segment that were being produced by Google, and each little dot you saw was a query going up into space, and we're showing a sample of the actual queries. And I guess it was daylight in the U.S. roughly, so it affects what the queries look like and so on. And that was a movie produced by Google Earth, which you can go and download. And the inlays were National Geographic photos that are overlaid in the right part of the globe, which is really cool. So maybe I should explain this. You guys might be wondering, no? So this, for those of you who don't know, is Stanley, which is a robotic car, probably the first successful robotic car in the world. And I was lucky enough to be just maybe 60 miles from here or so in the desert when they ran the DARPA contest, which was a $2 million prize for the first robot to drive through the desert 132 miles. And I think over 195 teams entered, and I'm really proud that a Stanford-based car, Stanley, from my alma mater also, was the winner. And I wanted to bring it here because I think it's really inspiring for the engineers and the people who work on consumer electronics that there's something that pretty much everybody thought was impossible, to have a car that would drive itself, avoid obstacles. It drove down a really steep, narrow mountain road and just did amazing things. The year before, none of the teams finished, and Stanley did it flawlessly, running at basically the speed limit the whole time. So I think it's really an amazing thing and shows what we as an industry can do if we put our minds to it. Now, actually, I tried to get them to drive Stanley out automatically, but they refused for good safety reasons. But I think inside here we have one of the main creators of Stanley, who's Mike Montemurlo. So please, can you come out and say hi to everybody? Before we get into the main presentation, I just wanted to say these guys were heroes for me, and I'm really amazed at what they're able to do. I guess it was about 50 people?
That's right.
50 people on the team and working over basically a year or two to make the car really work, and I think it's just an amazing achievement, something we should celebrate.
Well, thank you for inviting us to CES.
Yeah, so thank you. Now maybe we should get Stanley off the stage. So you wanna beat it? All right, thank you. So actually, while they're driving, I'll just say those are laser scanners on the top that basically will scan the terrain, and there's one camera, and that was enough really, and plus GPSs and things to really get it through the desert. So, and there's you're looking at the finish. This is Stanley finishing just not too far from here. So now what I really wanted in a car, and especially Stanley, was really a hamburger button. So This is something we really wanted to announce too, is that, you know, you have a, we're announcing this new product, Google Fast Food, where you push, it's an online system. So you push it on your car dashboard and it's connected through, you know, the cellular network. And then Stanley will actually drive you to the, not a fast food restaurant, but just a chute coming out. And you can see I'm riding in the passenger seat there. And you get your fast food instantly. You don't even have to know where to go. Well, seriously, we have a lot of things to show you. So actually, one of the first things I want to show you, coincidentally, is we've had a project with VW to do a prototype of Google Earth for a dashboard. So I'll walk you over here. Isn't this just beautiful? I wish I had one of these in my living room. But this is a full dashboard. Thank you. This is Daniel. He's going to do a quick demo. So basically, we're going to go from Las Vegas Airport to the Strip. And it's just giving you an idea of what it might be like if you had something like Google Earth really integrated well with your car. And we'd love to do something like this. Now, one of the cool things is you can actually see things like restaurants and gas stations and things like that along your route. But you can also see the routes before you do it from a bird's eye view. And so we're going to see that really briefly as you, you know, basically drive along the routes. So this is all live. You saw the demo earlier of Google Earth, but we can really put this kind of technology into cars. And we'll even show you into smaller devices in a second. Isn't that cool? So here we are going along towards the Strip. And we actually have models for the buildings now, some of them, so you can see the gray models are 3D models of the Strip buildings. And you can see different places to eat and so on. So thanks a lot, Daniel. Thanks for the demo. Now, the other amazing thing about this technology is we can actually put it into telephones, too, really well. And we're going to do a quick demo of that with a real live phone, which is not usually the way you do these things. So Matt's going to show us what would happen if we got too excited at CES and we overslept our flight through our connection and we ended up in Missoula, Montana. And we might actually want a place to stay, so he's going to look for a hotel near Missoula. And this is all real time. This is not. This is something you can run on your phone right now. You can scroll around. You can get look at different hotels. You can get directions. So he's going to stay at the... which hotel are you staying at?
Hampton Inn.
The Hampton Inn. Oh, he's going really high class. And you can see the different steps in the directions. And I actually used this recently. I was lost someplace, and I just used this. It was amazingly helpful. You can see satellite maps. You can zoom in and out just like you can on maps.google.com. It really, really works well. And I think these kind of mobile devices are really starting to work, and this is an example of them really working. So I think that's an amazing thing. We also announced today we have a version of this for the BlackBerry. So I know many of you probably in the audience have BlackBerries. Yes? Raise your hand. Yeah, so you can download this now at google.com/GLM, Google Local for Mobile. So thanks a lot, Matt. Now, a couple of years ago, I actually came to CES for the first time. And for me, it was an amazing experience because being sort of geeky kind of person, you know, imagine the world's or the America's largest trade show is actually a, sort of a geek convention. I mean, who would have thought? And so aside from just being a lot of fun and really interesting, as I was walking around, I sort of felt like, you know, you have all these devices at CES. And, you know, they have screens and keyboards and things like that mostly. And, you know, outputs and inputs of various types. But they don't really connect to each other. And I sort of, as I was walking around, I was really struck by that. And I want to give you sort of a quick talk on what I think about that and also maybe how you can be inspired by the internet and really apply the techniques from the internet to the consumer electronics world. So you have tons and tons of devices, you know, it's, you know, that don't connect to each other at all. And why is that? On the internet, we were really lucky, actually, at Google to hire this guy named Vint Cerf, who was one of the architects of TCP/IP, which is how all internet computers actually connect to each other. And the amazing thing about the internet is that people like Vint actually produced a standard that actually worked. You know, all the computers could talk to all the other computers, and it didn't matter whether they used, you know, fiber or Ethernet or serial ports or modems or even the old telephone standards, FDDI and things like that. It didn't matter. The software just worked, and it didn't matter whether the machine was, you know, next to you or all the way across the world. It still worked well. And I think that those principles can really be applied to all of the devices that you have also. The other interesting thing about the internet is it was developed by dreamers in universities. And it was based on truly open standards and maximally flexible and sort of no gatekeepers anywhere in the process. And that's why we have the web today and why we have things like Google. Now, right now, if you look at consumer electronic devices, and there's a lot of cameras here, you know, I can't connect to my camera. Let's say I have a camera, they all have USB. I have a USB pocket hard drive. I can't actually connect that into the camera to my pocket hard drive and have it store the pictures on my pocket hard drive. Why not? The hardware could actually work with a little bit of modification, but the software has not been developed to do those kinds of things. Now, maybe I want to have two cameras and actually exchange photos between them, because the two guys sitting here say, oh, you know, I'll give you my photos if you give me yours, you know, that kind of thing. But they can't do that either. They're going to have to find a computer. There's few people with computers, but it's kind of a hassle to have a computer in an auditorium like this. Now, I don't want, if they're device manufacturer type people here, I don't want you to say, oh, that's a great idea, I'll go implement it. Because you won't think of all the things that you should do. That's the whole point about the internet. People think of new things to do all the time, and you can't possibly think of all the possibilities. And if you did that, every manufacturer would have to implement every cool piece of software. And there's no point in that. You might as well have it done once. So I think you should instead make devices flexible by supporting reasonable open standards for how they work. And imagine you introduce a new Wi-Fi camera in 2007, and some very smart kid in Lithuania writes software so that you can actually share photos. So all the nearby devices, telephones, and different cameras around can get the group photo, and so everybody doesn't have to take the photo multiple times, like all of you guys are doing. That would really save a lot of effort and would be really cool, but not every device manufacturer should have to think of that, and we should really enable software people to do what they know how to do. Now, you should be able to plug in devices anywhere and have them work. So, you know, if you wanted a TV, there's a lot of talk at this conference about having TVs connected to the internet and connected to computers. You know, why can't you plug your TV into any convenient outlet? Ethernet, Wi-Fi, USB, you know, whatever is handy, and have images displayed on it. Why does it matter if it's in your living room or wherever? And in fact, you know, what if you want your USB webcam to monitor a front door? Shouldn't you just be able to plug it into a USB Ethernet adapter and plug it into Ethernet or plug it into Wi-Fi or whatever you happen to have in your house? It shouldn't be a big deal. It shouldn't require any software. So I'll give you just a few more examples. Why can't your Bluetooth cell phone start your car? Given that your car already has a Bluetooth speakerphone built in. Why can't you use that to unlock your car instead of carrying your keys? I mean, there's a million things. We're not going to think of all of them, but if we have good communication between these things, they'll really start to work well. The hardware we have is amazing. It can do tons and tons of stuff. Your Bluetooth car is probably near a cell phone most of the time. Why doesn't it download latest repair information automatically? It would be easy to do. So I have a rule to test if you're doing the right thing and you're a device manufacturer. One wire should do everything possible. So if you plug a wire into something, you should be able to do anything you could possibly do with that device, run software on it, charge it, power other devices from its battery or whatever, just with that single wire. And we could basically do that with the hardware we have. And it should work the same whether you plug that wire into your house, your neighbor's house, or all the way around the world. Now, how many devices, and basically all the devices at CES, like I mentioned, have keypads and screens and things like that if you look around. Now, why is there no standard for those little screens and keypads and things like that? So I just give you a little example. I'd like to have, you know, the ability to buy a little touchscreen. going to probably cost about $50. And I might plug it into my computer, I might plug it into Ethernet. And here I've just decided I wanted to use it as an alarm clock. So I plug it into my, let's say I plug it into my wall and actually has Bluetooth, it's talking to my computer, and it's showing my schedule, shows what time I need to wake up based on the meetings I have. And it actually can also show you maybe your music and let you control your stereo. But whatever the software people figure out what to do, that display should do it. You know, it doesn't need to necessarily have a speaker built in because maybe my computer wakes me up instead of the alarm clock. I'm amazed that we don't have devices like this. And the reason we don't is because we lack standards to do it. So let me just quickly tell you the other things that that I want to give you a positive example. So I guess what has worked well? Well, all right, this isn't the positive example quite yet. No, keep going. Next slide. So these are the power adapters just lying around our office. And I'm sure most of you, judging by the number of cameras, have things like this under your desk too. And I think it's a real hazard. I mean, you could electrocute yourself. You know, if one in a million adapters catches fire and you have 1,000 adapters, it starts to be an issue. You know, it's also a big hassle for the manufacturers because every one of those devices now has this thing that's in the box that's specific to a country. And so they have to repackage the boxes and maintain stock for different countries and all those kinds of things. It's just silly. These things are also really inefficient because guess what? They're sort of subsidized by the devices you buy, so people try to provide the cheapest ones possible. So they all suck power, and you guys probably read about that. Why not instead standardize the power and have a basic thing saying, I want 12 volts at 2 amps, give it to me. And then you can buy a really nice power supply that's really efficient, really small, is appropriate to the country you're in, and the consumer can pay for it instead of the device manufacturer. And thereby, they'll have higher margins. And we don't have that mess of cords and all those other things. So I think we really, really do need standards in these areas. Let me just cover two other things. So basically, most devices should be connected through adapters. So I have a slide here that shows different adapters. But you basically want to show, you can basically adapt anything to USB for like $20. If you want to do video, it's a little bit more expensive. I'm sort of guessing what it would cost, but you have adapters for everything else already. Do you really need all these ports running around and different kinds of things? I really don't think it's necessary. Let me back up and show you the phones. Phones have really been a positive example. You can basically plug any Bluetooth headset into any Bluetooth phone, and it'll work great, right? And these are just examples we found lying around the office. Charging is still an issue for these things. So you still need standard power. So in summary, I'll just summarize this section. We really want to get all this stuff to work together. And this is just sort of a personal passion of mine. But what we really need are adapters, like I mentioned. We want to have standards. Also, it's very important that we have standards for basically security, discovery, peering, and forwarding to the internet. And we don't really have those things yet. There are things we can adapt to do that. We don't quite have them yet. We also need standards, and there are some already that can be adapted for protocols. Excuse me. You can basically take audio, video, displays, and a bunch of other things. Now, finally, like I mentioned, you can take USB and really do most of the things you need to do with it. Now, I sort of already mentioned what those things were. So, actually back up for a second. So I'm going to just sort of plead with all of you, let's get the power supply problems fixed. Let's get all these devices talking together, and I think we'll get just amazing innovation, things we just totally can't predict happening. And also, all of you as consumers will be a lot happier. Your devices will really just work. You'll be able to plug anything together that kind of makes sense. If you need storage or you need a bigger display on something, you just plug in a display. Or whatever you want to do. And I think this is a really important thing to get done. We'd love to have help in doing this. I'd love ideas from people and so on. I just sort of thought I'd throw this out as an interesting it's something to talk about and get people thinking about. Now, we've done a small part about this in Mountain View. We've actually provided Wi-Fi over Mountain View for free. And part of that is to get all these devices really talking to each other and get a basic standard of communication in place and to get things really working. And it's most of the world does not have good access to the internet, and that's also an interesting problem. How do you make that happen? Now, you can email anyone, but you can't really instant message everyone. And I thought I'd just mention this a little bit in the context of standards. Guess which was developed at universities? Email was developed at universities. Instant messaging kind of worked in the early days of university internet, but there was no real standard, and it didn't take on. And so now companies have done it, but you know, if you run on one system, you can't talk to people on another system for reasons that don't really make sense to me. So we released Google Talk, which is an interoperable system. The idea is that anyone can talk to anyone else. We've had a whole bunch of different people develop interoperable systems for it, as you can see on the next slide. And we're really, really excited about the possibilities there. Also, as expansion of our partnership with AOL, we announced that our users and AOL users can interoperate, which we're also really excited about. It's kind of a separate thing. Now, the openness of Google Talk has really led to a lot of interesting things, too. We've had people just by themselves go out and develop cool applications for it. So one was the BlackBerry, which they just announced Google Talk for the BlackBerry clients you can download. And also we have a voice client that Nokia developed for the Nokia 770, which is a very cool Linux-based sort of Wi-Fi internet tablet kind of device. So it's kind of cool to see those things happening. Now let me switch gears for a second and talk about a very serious issue, I think. There's about 15% of the world is on the internet right now, 15% of the people in the world. So we still have a huge ways to go to get everyone online. You're seeing kind of where our queries come from. It turns out if you look at a picture of Earth from space at night, you'll see the exact same pattern. So basically anywhere there's electric light, there's internet. Anywhere there's internet, people are using Google. It all corresponds perfectly. But it's very sad that a lot of these areas, you notice it's daytime in Africa in this picture. That's what the lighter area represents. And there's almost no queries coming from anywhere in Africa. I think that's really sad, and I think it's an important thing to work on. Something we've been supporting to try to help this is the MIT laptop, $100 laptop project. And I just have a little mock-up here of that. But it's a very cool project, and I have very ambitious goals for it. They want to actually get 100 million of these out in the hands of children worldwide. And it's also a very cool device. It actually has a half a gigahertz processor. It has a good amount of RAM, 128 megs of RAM, they're thinking, and 500 megs of flash. And so I think they're also doing a lot of cool things to get the price down, but I do think it's really important to get devices like that out there in the world to get people greater access. Now, another big part of access is actually the internet part also. And another thing we've supported is Current, which is a company that's basically broadband power line. And so you can just take a little box like this and plug it in on your wall, and you know, you get broadband wireless internet access or broadband wired internet access. Now, I'll switch gears again, and I'll talk about a problem that probably many of you have had, similar to the device problem. But I imagine you have lots of software on your PCs. I recently installed a printer and installed 400 megabytes of software on my machine, which took quite some time. And actually, the printer started working before it installed the 400 megs of software. So it was actually basically all unnecessary. But I think it's very difficult in this day and age to keep your computer maintained, to keep the right software on it, to have protection for the computer from viruses and problems with the internet, and to also just have the right kind of stuff like PDF readers and good browsers and things like that. And to this end, we were just frustrated by this, and we had a team that was really excited to solve this problem. And for that, we're announcing Google Pack right now, which is, I think, an amazing product. It's really It's something that makes basically having the right software on your computer as easy as going to the Google homepage. It's no fuss at all. Now, let me just cover a few of the things we have in Google Pack. So basically, you can go and in one click, you can download a whole bunch of different software. You can do safety and security for Adware and Norton Antivirus. You can find things using Google Desktop and Earth. You can manage your photos using Picasa. You can browse PDFs using Adobe Reader 7. You can get Firefox to browse the web better. And you can also have a great photo screensaver. And how much does this cost? It's free, yes. Yeah. Now, let's do a quick demo of this, because I want to show you how easy it is, really, to get done. So, Sundar, you want to take us away? So, if you go to pack.google.com right now, you can download Google Pack, those of you with laptops out there. And you can, there's one legal message, thanks to the attorneys in the room. And then, you should read that very carefully, of course. And basically, you'll get a tiny little installer program that will even take a very short amount of time to get over a modem. And then you'll be able to, it'll start downloading all of your programs in the background. And actually, it's smart. It doesn't use all of your bandwidth, so you can actually still use your computer to read your email or surf the web or whatever you want to do, as Sundar is demonstrating. But it's already actually installed some things like the Google Toolbar for IE, the Google Pack Screensaver, Picasa, which is our photo management software, very nice. And you can run this and play it and play with it and so on. Still, while it's installing, right now it's doing Adware Personal. It will keep all these things updated and running on your machine and happy, all automatically. And we've also enforced some guidelines on the software makers here that they don't annoy you. It doesn't bring up dialog boxes asking you for things. The software doesn't step on other software settings and things like that, which you may have had happen on your machine. I know it happens on my machine all the time. So anyway, we're very, very excited about this. Here's some of the software in there. I think, I don't know, you guys should all go download it. I mean, I think it's really a great thing. Even during the demo here, a very short amount of time, we've already made this one computer work much better. So thanks to Sundar and his team for this. Now, Google Pack in itself would probably be enough for us to announce here. I mean, I think it's just a really, really useful thing. But we actually have one more thing to announce. And it's always been Sergey's fantasy that we would have Google integrated with your brain. Now, we launched Google Video about a year ago in beta, and it was kind of weird and innovative, those of you who followed it. You know, it was weird because it was called Google Video, but you couldn't actually watch any video. And it was innovative because it let you search TV programming, which you couldn't search before. And we learned a lot from that. We learned that the video was really interesting and useful, but you really need to have access to it, which is not surprising. Then we launched Google Video Upload Program, which is also weird and innovative. It was weird because we made two Chinese teenagers really famous. I don't know if you remember these guys, but it had to do with the Backstreet Boys also. And it was innovative because anyone could upload anything, and we just covered hosting and all the hard details of making that really work well. Let's hear from some content providers. We have a quick video about how that product's been working. I think it's been an amazing thing.
Well, we produce all kinds of action sports content, from surfing in Hawaii to snowboarding and skiing in Europe, and even to the next door neighbor that skateboards and makes his own skate videos. Every week, our editors are putting up the best and freshest content online, and every one of those has a place on Google Video.
They're soldiers on the front line of the battle against the spread of HIV/AIDS in Cote d'Ivoire.
UNICEF's mandate is the children of the world. We work for every child, for their health, for their education, their equality, and their protection. And UNICEF believes that we want to try to get ourselves up to the electronic podium and tell that story. And Google Video is a beautiful way for us to reach out to people in every corner of the world.
I was just in Ethiopia, actually, and I just kind of on a whim, I searched in Google Video for Ethiopia, and we have all these films of the protests there and things like that, which are just from sort of from the front lines. So I think it's been an amazing tool for us, amazing to see. I know every day there's more and more things being uploaded there. But for a lot of providers, they actually cost them a lot of money to make their video. I don't know if that's surprising to people, but they really need ways to monetize it. And for that reason, the users also need a way to watch the information. So when we had Google Video initially, we had all the television shows, but you couldn't actually watch them because there's no way to pay for them. There's no way for the content producers to make that available to the users. What we're announcing today is Google Video Store. And it's weird and innovative like the previous versions of Google Video in that it lets anyone sell video. So any from the largest studios to the smallest independents, and it puts the content producers in charge. They can decide what to charge for their video. Now, if you guys are content providers, I do encourage you to think about what other people are willing to pay for your video, but because it might not be the same amount that you want. But in any case, content producers are in charge, and they can decide whether they want the videos for rental or for download or many other things. So we've already got thousands of videos up online to buy, and it's very simple and easy to install. We have a new Google Video Player, which is really easy to get, and we'll show it in a second. And I guess, you know, we wouldn't want to announce a video store without a whole bunch of great video, right? No? So we have a lot of great video from a whole bunch of partners, including historic news footage from ITN. We have interviews from Charlie Rose. We have music videos from Sony BMG and cartoon classics like Rocky and Bullwinkle. And, yeah, you're supposed to be excited now. Wait, where's the Bullwinkle fans? Yeah. And actually, for basketball fans, we're delighted the NBA has agreed to permit us to allow users to download all NBA games 24 hours after their broadcast. And
Wait a minute. Larry, what's going on? I got to figure this out. See what's going on, man. You said, what's going on? This is a big deal, man. You got to tell me. You got to explain this to me.
Who the heck are you?
What? Kenny Smith, two NBA championships inside the NBA?
You're worse than Charles Barkley, man.
I'll tell you. You're telling me now that...
Yeah.
You're telling me now that I could download NBA games 24 hours after and watch them.
Yeah.
Wait, why didn't you have this when we were winning championships? I would have been watching myself all the time, every day, all day, on my computer, on my laptop, everywhere. What's going on?
That must be very exciting.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go in the back. I'm going to see if I can get the guys to download my old games, put them on Google so everybody can see the championships and all those things, and then I can make fun of Charles when I get back too.
All right.
All right. Thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, we're really excited to be working with all of these partners, but as we roll out this new endeavor, we couldn't be happier to have one other partner, a premier partner that creates some of the world's most popular content, CBS. Yeah. Beginning today, CBS CSI, Survivor, NCIS, and Amazing Race will be available for download for $1.99 each. Archived classics from Star Trek, yeah, to My Three Sons, to The Brady Bunch will also be available. This is the very best content there is on broadcast television and some of the most popular programming in the world, and it's coming to Google Video. This is a truly historic meeting of the established and new media. And we're very proud to have here today with us to celebrate this terrific first, the new CBS Corporation President and CEO, a man who needs no introduction and who defines creativity in the media business, Leslie Moonves.
Thank you, Larry. It is truly great to be here and be part of this amazing presentation from Google. Google and CBS. CBS and Google. Who would ever thought those two brands would be together on the same stage at the same time? It's pretty amazing. One, CBS is the most established name in traditional media. The other, Google is writing new media history every single day. And yet today's unprecedented coming together of these two great names is in a way what our media universe is all about. The marriage of content with new ways of getting that content to where it matters to the people. CBS and Google, we're each number one in what we do. Each of us needs the other to take the next leap forward. Earlier this week, we at CBS split from Viacom and established a new independent company, a company dedicated to driving the very best content across all platforms to reach the greatest number of people. That's our mission. Now is the week, the first week, as a new corporation comes to a close. I can think of no better exclamation point than to partner with a company that operates the world's leading search engine. Suddenly, at home, at the office, or now almost everywhere, on a wireless laptop, fans can access what is already some of the most watched programming on television. CSI, Survivor, whenever you want it, all you need is a PC. And for the first time, content, as Larry mentioned, from CBS and Paramount's huge library is being made available for download as well. From I Love Lucy to Star Trek to The Brady Bunch, our archive of timeless classics and cult favorites are ripe for video search. And so we're very, very pleased that Google not only is, but will remain a very Brady place. Thank you. I want once again to thank you, Larry, for letting us join you today in this huge presentation. And if you'll stick around, he's going to show you how this thing works. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're honored. I think we're really honored to have Leslie with us today to make that announcement. Now, let me show you how easy this really is to do. So we'll have a quick demo here with Peter to show you Google Video. Yeah. So we'll first show an NBA clip. And this is, if you go to Google Video, this is what you'll see. You can quickly watch. You can quickly watch your basketball clip, for example. You can see the first 30 seconds for free of these programs, and we'll just watch a little bit of this.
The Cavaliers Television Network, as you see, Zydrunas Ilgauskas and the Rook out of Utah, Andrew Bogut in that center circle.
All right, and then you can also let's go to like a Charlie Rose clip for a second.
As tonight we continue our conversations about technology and innovation from the Google campus in Mountain View, California. This evening we talk about convergence, one of the important new ideas in technology with John Chambers.
You can actually see on here, you can download to your video iPod or your Sony PSP also, which you can do with the non-copy protected content on here. Yeah. Now, let's go to Survivor and let's actually, why don't we purchase this one? Show how easy that is.
It's based on the Maya calendar. You should know that.
Now, you can actually buy it while you're watching the preview, which is kind of cool. And then you'll confirm the purchase. And then basically you can download it. And we actually have it already downloaded to save a little time here. But it's not too bad to get it downloaded. You can, this is the new Google Video Player, which is very simple and easy to use. And it actually has a very cool feature. You can actually only watch the important parts of Survivor. Where is the important part? I think it might be about there. But in any case, you see the quality is really good. It's really easy to use. I think it's really, really exciting to see this quality of content available in this easy and intuitive way. Now, thank you, Peter, for the demo. Now, actually, I couldn't be more excited about this release of Google Video with all this amazing premium content in it. And I wanted to also make sure we left some time for questions. So I thought it'd be fun to answer questions. So we're going to actually bring Robin back out to help me moderate. Yeah.
Larry Page is a co-founder of Google. He spoke at the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas on Friday. This is PodTech News.